Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. As I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march.
Out to the moon, come out.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry, because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to... I'm going to get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me.
How'd it go?
We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Look, B.I., man, I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man, you know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right, relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday, you know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know.
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights, close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, Man, it ain't me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you gonna do?
I don't know. But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
Man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today. He a man.
All right, we're doing trending topics today. I'm opening up the mic here real soon, but let me just go off of what do you call this? Yahoo! Which is where I get a lot of my news. Headlines here is wealthy L.A., Los Angeles, California figure lured black men to their deaths. Another headline is subway shooter suspect ate at Cat's Deli during the manhunt. Let's see. There's another one here. She was not trash. All right. Let's go to this one with... out in Los Angeles, California. Ed Buck sentenced to 30 years in prison for abuses that led to the men's drugs death. Ed Buck, and there's a picture of him here, once was a fixture in West Hollywood political scene, was sentenced yesterday, to 30 years in prison for the drug and sex crimes that included providing lethal doses of methamphetamines to two men. To the outside world, Buck was a champion of causes such as fur bans and AIDS awareness, and donor to Democratic office holders. But behind the walls of his Laurel Avenue apartment, they're going to make a movie about this dude, was a nightmare. For nearly a decade, the wealthy white Buck lured young black men at their lowest points in their lives, homeless, addicted, resorting to substances, level sex work, into what he called a party and play sessions. Okay, let's see. The jury convicted Buck last year of a host of felonies, including distributing methamphetamines, resulting in the death and enticement to cross state lines to engage in prostitution. Okay, so you can read all the sort of details on your own. All right, so that's him. Then we got Cowboys cornerback, person of interest in a homicide case. And this guy, in New York? The New York City subway shooting suspect ate at Cash's Deli. I guess the next time I go to New York, because I love deli food, and you go check out Cash's Deli. His name is Frank James, the man accused of opening fire on a subway train in Brooklyn, visited multiple Manhattan neighborhoods, including a stop at the famous Cat's Delicatessen, as the New York City Police Department scoured the city for him. According to police sources, James, 62, was arrested in Manhattan's East Village neighborhood on Wednesday afternoon. Authorities say, more than 24 hours after 10 people were shot on a crowded subway as the train pulled into Brooklyn's 36th Street station, 29 people were wounded overall in chaos, right? Well, I'm glad they called him. Well, now, they were calling him at first a person of interest. But I guess they were, well, he's a suspect now. And, of course, if it's any trending topics that you guys want to talk about, 619-768-2945 is the number. Let me go to my phones if I get my screen back up here. Let's see. Oh, and did anybody, I don't know if you guys watched Snowfall, the book titled The Wretched. I haven't read it, but it's an interesting book. 410 area code, your mic is open.
Hotep, Brother Alea. I come to you this morning with a heavy heart. You know, it was today, on Good Friday, that he led our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, to that hill, and they put him on that cross. And his last words was, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." And in that spirit, I'm forgiving all of those gangsters that shot our little babies down while they were playing in the street. I forgive all of those politicians that wants to take away our voting rights.
Mm-hmm.
I forgive all of those policemen that abuse us and shoot us down in the street like dogs. I forgive all of those whites that kills us and the justice system gets away with it, and I forgive those justices. And I hope that you and others can join me and hold hands with those that despitefully hates us because of the color of our skin, and recite those words like Martin Luther King, you know, where he said he hoped that we can join hands and you can shout free at last, free at last. And the thing is, we have a lot to be thankful for. But that brother that they hung on the cross today wanted us to love and turn the other cheek and join everybody in a spirit of forgiveness. And I want to extend my hand out to one of the brothers on the phone there that we usually have a heated conversation with over and over again. I want to let him know that I love him like a brother. And today is a day for forgiveness. You know, that's the trending topic I want to extend out there today.
Well, what's today? What they call it, Good Friday?
That's what it is, brother. That's what it is.
Good
now,
Friday.
Getting to reality. I want to go ahead on and for all of those folks like on that Baltic street or what it is that comes out saying that, you know, Africans and foreigners don't get shot. There was a brother in Grand Rapids that got shot in the head, wasn't it? So you can
That is a trending topic. I'm glad you brought that up. There was a immigrant, actually, African immigrant. I don't know his command of English, how well he had it. But the video's online where he's unarmed, and he was shot in the back of the head.
But you see, on a day like today, we're supposed to forgive that policeman, you know, in a spirit of love. And the thing is, you know, Brother L.A., I just want to bring that up that, you know, you can get rid of that garbage that people been saying, well, you know, them Africans and Nigerians don't get shot. This guy was from the Congo. And his daddy, so with that being the case, you can, next time somebody bring that garbage up, you can say, well, hey, look, it doesn't matter if you're black. They don't understand they don't care whether you don't speak a language, where you're from, what your religion is, what your politics is. When they roll up on you, hey, you black. And for those people to say, well, what is black? Hey, All you got to do is just look at, just get out there and be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Your politics don't mean nothing. Your religion don't mean nothing. Where you from don't mean nothing. How much money you got and your education. Well, Skip Gates proved that, though, didn't he? So I just wanted to bring that up with the naysayers today.
Let me ask you this now. Do you think where a black person lives in the United States matters? In other words, I personally believe that the worst cities for blacks to live in are the densely populated New York, Chicago, L.A., all those places. I think the rural areas are the best place for blacks to live in. That's just my take on it. What do you think?
Well, let me give you this. Tell that to Skip Gates when they dragged his behind out of off of his porch and locked his behind up, you know, for breaking in his own house, supposedly. My wife had a cousin here in North Carolina, model citizen, worked at the post office, deacon in the church, came home and was getting his mail out of the mailbox. Didn't have a criminal record nowhere. Getting his mail out of the mailbox, got back in his car, and a deputy rolled up on him and took his billy club and broke the window, got shards of glass in his eye, and beat the hell out of him. Now, I'm in the rulers of rural areas. I think it's just, Brother Elliot, it all depends on the mood of a person today at the wrong place at the wrong time if you're black. You know, I would like to think you're right. It doesn't happen very often. And we don't have any shootings down here either because everybody carry guns around here. So we don't have no idiots coming, black idiots coming around here with drive-by shootings either because they know they're going to get shot. But I'm just saying, you can't put it on location. It can happen anywhere at any time if you're black. Now, I know you got some people out there saying, there you go with that black stuff again. But, you know, I mean, you got statistics that proves that, Brother Elliot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you know, every time you try to come up with some reasoning, you know, the facts that, you know, contradicts all of that. And Skip Gates was the whitest of whitest black folk. You know what I mean? He was well known.
And one of his neighbors called the police.
Yeah. Yeah, because, see, he wasn't supposed to be there. Look, Cambridge is a college town. He was well known as a professor at Harvard, you know. But he got a rude awakening. Hey, look, you black just like the rest of us. Idiot, you know. But, you know, Brother Elliot, you just got to be careful out here.
Yeah, that you do. Did you see the video of this guy who got shot up in Michigan by that cop in the back of his head?
I didn't want to look at it. I really didn't want to look at it. And look, I'm going to say this, Brother Elliot. I started to look at it, but didn't he take off and run?
He did.
Brother L.A.,
and
I'm
thinking there might be, I'm not trying to excuse what happened, but I'm thinking it could have been a language barrier there.
Maybe so,
maybe
not.
And I'm also thinking this, do the police need to be armed with lethal weapons? Because there are ways to apprehend people without using lethal weapons. Or even, you know what, how about this? Let them run. Because you're eventually going to catch them anyway. But just let them run.
Brother L.A., in the United States, policemen need guns. Okay? They need guns. And the thing is, because, look, everybody in the United States just about have a gun, so they need guns. And some of the confrontations that they get into, they have to defend themselves. So now I'm going online with that. I've never said that policemen don't have a right to shoot. You know, it's all a matter of discretion. Like you said before, some cities have said, look, for minor violations, you let them go, you know. And here's the other thing, like you, Brother L.A., if I got your license plate number, I can find you.
Right.
You know, all I got to do, before a cop gets out, they run your tags.
Mm-hmm.
So they know who the hell you are. But, you know, I don't know, it's just, you know, you run up on a guy that's had a bad day. And you, and I'm going to say this, Brother L.A., because I know one of your lawyer friends said that thing had been done away with, the Brown book, passed the board, what, Brown versus the Board of Education. It's been documented that white people aren't bound to respect the rights of a Negro. Now, the thing is, we know that, hey, the civil rights bills have been passed, but that's still out there. And when a cop runs up there and a black man gives him a bunch of shit, he's been trained that you don't take no shit off a damn Negro. Now, that's in his subconscious. That's all on the movies. That's all on TV programs and everything else. If you notice TV programs, the first thing a cop does on these programs is they jack a brother up. I mean, they slam him up against the wall and everything else. Now, you know, it's a subtle hint that, hey, look, you know, you're supposed to bash the shit out of a nigga. And just watch it. I used to watch cops. And the first thing they do is put their knee on the neck of a black suspect or a black assailant. But them white boys, they didn't do that. So, I mean, subconsciously, a white person is saying, hey, look, you know, a nigga ain't got no damn rights. And for him to put his hands on me, I'm supposed to take him out. You know, now, I know you got some people out there listening that don't believe that, but just look at it. You don't have to take my word for it.
Right.
That's been the rule. And look, if they do go to court, they'd get out of it. And look, I'm not just talking about policemen. I'm talking about just regular civilians that don't have a badge gets out of kicking a Negro in the ass, excuse the expression. So they're given train to do what the hell they want to a black person. Am I right or am I wrong? Well, don't agree with me because you might get in trouble. No, you might get in trouble, but just...
Well, no. Well, that's why I like the internet. You can basically say what you want to say online. Because Benjamin Crump, how many cases does he get a year on this stuff? He gets about at least, it seems like Benjamin Crump gets a high pro, at least two high profile cases a year, at least.
He could get more than that, really. I mean, because the shit happens so often. he can pick and choose like he wants to. I mean, this thing I was telling you about that happened to over here, they settled with the brother. You know, his eyes, I mean, he's got blurred vision and everything, but Benjamin Crump wasn't in on that. And he got a pretty good darn settlement. But if Benjamin Crump, look, Benjamin Crump can get more business than he needs or wants. Because this shit goes on all the time. And look, I bet you somebody say, nah, I got to go on all the time. But look, all you got to do is just look at the facts. But let me get to the subway shooter. And, you know, you can go on with somebody else. Brother L.A., you can tell my boy Brad ain't done. His elevator ain't going to the top floor. He's half-baked. He's got a mental issue.
I agree. Yeah.
But now, he's a terrorist, though. You know, they ain't going to let him go with this mental insanity shit. He's going to get
prosecuted. But it seems like that would be the defense that they would use. Right. He doesn't, because he's not wrapped too tight.
But he's going to get punished to the highest extent of the law because they've already labeled him as a terrorist. And look, he's a damn bad shot because if I had that many bullets in my clip, which I carry a gun with just as many bullets, I ain't gonna want a bunch of people.
And he was in a subway system, which is crowded as hell.
That's right. That's right.
And
he
but nobody got killed though. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah. They, I don't,
people got shot,
but they
no
didn't
fate,
get killed.
No fatalities. Yeah.
So now I look at that guy and look, he traveled all over the place now. He came from Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and he just happened to pick Brooklyn. Hell, he could have stopped in Chicago and did a lot of shooting, couldn't he? He could have stopped
yep.
in any city, Philadelphia, any damn where.
Well, that's where he picked up a van in Philadelphia. Yeah.
Yeah, he could have shot up any number of cities. You know, I'm suspicious of him. Some just ain't right. That don't pass the smell test with me. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there. But look, brother, today is Good Friday, and we're supposed to engage each other in a mood of love. And I hope that you can forgive those that despitefully hate you or agree with you or what have you.
I got a question before you go. And I heard this, I guess I don't know who said it yesterday. Who, in your opinion, in the United States, as far as the United States, was the greatest black leader, and I hate that to use that term, but for lack of, or let's say black figure, in United States history thus far? You can only pick one person.
Oh, God. You know what? You know, I'm a Booker T. Washington fan. But look.
Okay. Good choice.
The greatest single black leader that have changed the mood of the United States and to effectively change black culture was Elijah Muhammad. And I'll tell you why.
Excellent.
Before
choice.
Elijah. Huh?
Choice.
Before Elijah Muhammad came on the scene, if somebody had to call you an ugly black fool, you would have beat the shit out of him. He made people embrace their blackness. He came along and said, look, I'm a black Muslim, which Muslim means one who submits to the will of God. But he didn't use the traditional Muslim orthodoxy type style religious belief. He used the Bible and the Quran, and he quoted from both of them, and
yeah.
he showed
mm-hmm.
black folks that you could do for self and to respect women and to build your own institutions like the Muhammad University. And he had his grocery stores, clothing stores, cleaners,
mm-hmm.
restaurants and everything else. But my choice, if
farms,
I look,
they had farms, they all had quite a bit of farmland, and he
even
had
right.
their own trucking system.
And he was an importer of fish from South America, had his own fish market business. And the thing
mm-hmm.
is, I hate to pick one, but if I could pick one or I need to pick one, that's the guy. And look at his disciples, Malcolm X and the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. Those
right.
are true conservatives. And look, he was able to clean up the drug dealers, the drug addicts. And every follower that you see is clean cut, neatly dressed. And the thing is, they are polite, yes, sir, no, sir. And the thing is, he had a rite of passage class for Muslim girl training schools and the Fruit of Islam schools to teach these young boys and girls to be gentlemen and ladies. So if I had to
right.
pick one, I'd have to pick one.
Excellent choice. I would have to go with him, too. Matter of fact, and I really shouldn't compare, but if I were king of the United States, but I'm not, that statue of MLK in D.C., I would have to put Elijah Muhammad as well.
You got to. I mean, name somebody else that changed the culture.
Nobody. No, I can't think of anybody that can even come near him.
No.
I can't think of anybody who's come near him.
Yeah, and look, I got to give Master Farad Muhammad credit, too, because they said he was the one that trained him. But now, look, that
now,
picture.
Now, is Farad Muhammad, because all pictures, is, wasn't he a white dude?
They said that his mother was black and his father was black and his mother was Egyptian. But now look, that picture that you see ain't Master Farad Muhammad.
Oh, it isn't.
No, that's not him. And look, I'm saying this based on my research, and I wish I could write a book, but that guy that you see is not the real. See, that's why come Elijah Muhammad is a genius. The man that they call Master Farad Muhammad was in several black movements in this United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, they were smart enough to put a white man up there because they had seen what had happened to others, black leaders during that time. But now look, do you think black folks would have embraced that religion if it had been a black man pitch up there and calling him the Messiah and the personage of Master Farad Muhammad in that day and time? See, that's the genius of Elijah Muhammad. But that guy's not the real Master Farad Muhammad. In fact, the guy that trained Elijah Muhammad, that wasn't him, even his name. Based on my research now, I haven't read any books,
okay.
But I looked at that picture, and the thing is, he's a well-known character in the United States. He was in, I'm going to give you a clue. He was in the UNIA. He was a Moor in the Moor Science Temple. The same time Donald Elijah Muhammad was in. And the thing is, his brand of Islam, oh, look, he was a prolific writer. He was one of the conveners of the Pan-African movement.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Marcus Garvey worked for him one time. Now, I'm just about giving him away. So the thing is, that's the genius of him and Elijah Muhammad, because black folks would not have embraced that religion if they had to put a black man's face up there at that time. And plus,
right.
the authorities couldn't get this guy because they were looking for a white guy. I even know the name of the white guy's name of the white guy that's on that picture. And if I ever see you in private, I'll tell you who he is.
Okay, yeah, that would be educational in itself.
Oh, but I'd have to kill a bunch of Nation of Islam followers, telling if I told them that, you know. But I'm just telling you, that's the genius of Elijah Muhammad and the man that helped them set up the Nation of Islam.
Yeah, they. I would say. Man, imagine if Martin Luther King had the same message, or at least part of the same message, particularly the do for self part of it.
Yeah, yeah. But look at the strategy he had to use to get black folks out of the mindset that they were in at that time. You know, you were told that you was worthless, doofless, the negative images, and he rose us up to accept our blackness at that time, when actually people didn't even want to be called Negro.
Right.
You know, most people accepted the word color. That was the preferred identity that people were using back then. But just think about it. Just, I don't know what the other people say because I didn't hear your program. Who did they say was the greatest?
I heard this on a video yesterday by Tariq Nasheed. So the question went out there, who do people think was the greatest black leader in the United States? And now he agrees. I mean, Tariq and she are going along with what we're saying, Elijah Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
And based on a lot of the accolades that you just mentioned. And because I'm thinking with the that Atlanta Mafia with Andrew Young, King, Abernathy, and all those people, none of them, and all those black churches, the Southern Leadership Conference and all that, none of those conferences, I'm not discounting what work they did do, but none of them, that do for self thing followed up with, you know, God knows how many entrepreneurs, the farms, the schools, all that, whereas Elijah Muhammad never went, think about it. That speech where Martin Luther King says, we've come, I think they had some march on D.C., march on Washington, we've come to get our check. Let's see, they didn't come out with none of that. They didn't answer nobody's check. They went out and got their own. But that's why if it were me, I would take the statue of Martin Luther King out of D.C., and replace it with Elijah Muhammad.
No, you leave
but
that there.
That's not going to happen no time soon.
No, you leave that there. But the thing is, you can put another statue somewhere else. I wouldn't take away anybody's effort to do ever what they needed to do, but you can put one up for them everywhere that you go. And the main thing is, I saw a thing with Alton Maddox. He said the reason why Elijah Muhammad put the programs in where he put in was because he came from a county in Georgia where black folks controlled everything. They controlled whatever else was going on in that county. So he said the religion was just a part of it, but he was raised where black folks was to control the space they occupied, based on how those black folks was doing in that county where he came from. So that wasn't a stretch for him. You know, it was just that he used the religion to more or less close the circle because, you know, back in that day, well, today, religion is a big thing with black folks. But the thing is, he said the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was raised with that type of mentality and where he came from. But look, and he ain't said nothing that Booker T. Washington didn't say. Booker T. Washington, I mean, in his own right, was doing some of the same thing and saying some of the same things that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was saying, but he wasn't able to change the culture to make black people proud of themselves as black people. That's the one thing that is the key to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Once you get somebody proud of their race, see, everything else falls in place. He gave the black man and the black woman dignity and a pride about themselves. So it was easy for them to go through with all the other things that he did, like the schools and the businesses and the land and the airplanes and the all of that other stuff. That's our problem today is identity, L.A. Think about it. Hello?
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back.
Okay. Beaver, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I had to call in on, wait a minute, let me see if I can get my mic going. Beasley, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you know what? The main switchboard is
Are you dead?
Okay.
Are you?
You can still hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay,
well,
I'm trying to get rid of the echo.
Oh, okay. Well, let me hear what someone else has to say, because you know how I feel about it. But anyway.
Well, Robin was up there, but then she dropped off when we were having these difficulties. Let me see if I can get her back. You know, for some reason, I thought Good Friday was last week.
You like I am. I can't keep up with the days. And that's something I don't usually get into anyway. My wife just told me about it this morning.
I was on another matter yesterday. And it was a government agency also. Dealing with a water bill. And in another city. So I wanted to call back tomorrow, and they said, no, we're closed tomorrow. So I went on and did what I had to do yesterday, so I don't have to call back in on Monday. But,
yeah.
Because it's not a bank holiday. Banks are open today, aren't they?
Yeah, they're federal.
Okay.
I used to do trading on the stock market, and I saw it was closed today, and I was wondering why. And my wife was telling me it was Good Friday. So that's the reason why I know it's Good Friday.
Okay. Well, I guess people will be, this is a day off for some people, depending on where they work. And then people are going to, I guess, church today, or a lot of people will be going to church or wherever religious service is on Sunday. So, all right. Well, since you brought up the Baltic thing, I'm gonna put out something. I'm gonna see if we can get her back on here. So hopefully she'll be on here in a few minutes. I'm gonna mute our mics until hopefully we can get her back.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what my boy got.
Before I get started
Bianchi,
with this video,
there. I don't
want
see
to
him on the board.
Thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, You see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change comes to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 a piece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
Shit, dude. She just hit you in your face. Shit, dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She's like you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga can't. That nigga hurting himself.
You from Nuke State.
It's over. What I say is over. Everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck you.
Let's go across the street. I ain't told you. I'll slap the fuck out of one of y'all.
Real quick. Just like this. What it's worth.
Look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you can do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity, and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield? See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them, which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.